RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Macca, good morning. How's your weekend?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate.
How's your week?
Oh,
how's your break?
I slept in a little bit last week. It was good. Went down to Torquay with the wife and kids and had a fantastic time down there. Now, I thought you'd have half in this morning. We'd be grilling him this morning. He's under pressure already. They've had a loss. Their first AFLW, Carlton have had their first AFLW loss. Does that mean pressure for
put the request
coach?
In, unfortunately, with the media
denied.
Manager? Yeah, denied. No, refusing to comment. Didn't want to comment on what's been a tough preseason
so far. Tough preseason, I know.
Hasn't won a game.
Hasn't won a game, and the Cats coming into the competition.
Yes.
And, you know, I think they came from behind. The Cats, they win by 2 points in the end, and a bit of pressure on for young Harford already.
So, yes, hopefully we get an exclusive one-on-one with the Carlton AFLW coach.
Embattled. No, not quite embattled yet, so we're going a bit early. No, I had a good week. Thanks, Maisie. It was good fun down there. Bit of sun. It was pretty hot last week, and it looks like it's going to be hot towards the end of this week as well.
40 on Thursday, which is a setback for golfers.
Setback, it sure is. So,
yes.
Well, unless it's a very early start to golf, but you can't do that.
No,
so.
We can't.
No, I can on Thursday, but I won't be.
No, it's what's your threshold for being out playing cricket, golf, going to the races? What is your temperature threshold?
21.
20?
No, I'm kidding. No, not true. 30 sort of starting to get a little bit hot. But when it gets to 40, there's no winners at 40 unless you're, beachside. And that was the beauty down at Torquay. The sea breeze was just magnificent. So everyone was sweltering up here in Melbourne. And I was following the temperature, and we were just putting our feet up down there. And
I've been checking the long-range weather forecast for a while because I've actually got one of my good mate's weddings on Sunday.
There's setbacks with weddings that, 30, I think 30 is the point when you're done up in a suit, isn't it?
John Hastings and I are very good sweaters.
You did say to me that you're a sweater. I'm not a massive sweater.
I rival Pat Rafter for sweater.
Really?
Yeah, no, real
Pat
elite.
Had almost had the permanent patch around his arm, didn't he?
No, that's me. Elite sweater. And
Jumping Johnny Ralph might be a little bit like that in the Herald Sun offices.
He
does that a little.
So suits for me in hot weather,
no go.
A good thing.
Well, you've got to keep the jacket on then, don't you?
Yeah.
Which is uncomfortable and which you don't want to do.
Yep.
So. And Johnny Hastings is the same, isn't
it? Yep, elite sweater as well. So we were talking last week and, geez, I'm going to struggle at this when it comes Sunday afternoon.
So is that
40.
Oh, really?
I don't think Sunday's too bad. I want to check the seven-day forecast today.
I think it might be a little bit cooler than that, thank goodness. I think there's a change. I sound like Sandra Bunn here, don't I? So,
no, Jane Bunn.
Oh, Sandra Bunn. What am I saying? Jane Bunn. Gee, I'm going well. Sandra Bunn. Sorry, Jane. Going well here. It's a good start.
Jane's actually got her photos up in the RSN 927 office.
Is it?
Yeah, because she sent, because Whitey is a dedicated weather watcher.
I'll be excommunicated from the station because I know Whitey would have heard that.
And Jane actually sent Whitey a personalised card.
Really?
Yes.
Is that the thing that's up?
Two great weather watchers.
Really? He is a great weather watcher, isn't he?
Loves it.
Whitey.
Yep.
My wife's exactly the same. She is completely and utterly obsessed. You know when I think about the weather? Never.
No,
I just walk out the door.
No.
Don't care what's coming. My mother always says, take an umbrella. I don't care. If I get wet, I get wet.
Do you have a weather... Remember everyone had a weather station at home?
Yes, I do.
My grandpa had one of them.
Yeah.
In Sydney.
Did she?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
My wife would if she could. She's completely and utterly... I think there's two on her iPad. She's got the BOM site, non-stop, and the other one is... Flight radar. Have you found the flight radar?
No, I haven't.
Where you can track planes all throughout Australia and all throughout the world. My wife is obsessed with it. Won't talk to me because she's too busy on the flight radar. I'm not sure what her plans are, to be perfectly honest.
just watching planes she could be on.
We can be laying in bed at night and it'll be 11:30 and the plane will go overhead and she'll go... That's Sydney, 737. It's 10 minutes late.
Really?
Yep, she's a freak.
That's real train.
Can I apologise to Jane Bunn? I don't know why I said that. I feel horrible.
I reckon you were
that.
Getting mixed up with Sandra Sully.
I was, because, I was. I was doing a little bit of mix and mash there. But no, it's good to see Jane's back as well. Good to see Jane's been back for about a week, I think she has now.
She'll be missing the tennis this year.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a few at that network that are missing the tennis. They'd be a little bit lost, some of the Channel 9 and Channel 7 personalities, wouldn't they, with the missing of, you know, changing over of sports. And also, Shane Crawford, my good friend, changing from Channel 9 to Channel 10 just for the interim.
Into the jungle. He'll need his weather station.
Well, he will, and he's got an aversion to snakes too, so I'm not sure how this is going to all play out, but it will be compulsive viewing because he loves nothing better in life than getting under the skin of Dermot Brereton, so that's going to be very interesting.
All right, that will be interesting. Are you a jungle watcher?
I have to be, sadly, from my young daughter who's 11. She's obsessed with it and did get a call from Crawf. You've got to sometimes keep things under wraps. When we're down at Torquay, we did get a call from Crawf saying that there was a potential that this could happen. Right. And my daughter was in the car and heard it and she wanted to tell all of her friends. And you can't.
No,
you can't. So we had to ban her from doing that. But no, I think he'll be compulsive viewing. So yeah, I think looking forward to seeing how he handles the... I hope the snakes are part of the early initiation for Crawf because he's not going to handle that at all.
Now, here's a question for you. Last night we were talking about Channel 7 and Channel 9. Mm. What was your choice of sport last night? Because gripping tennis match, Roger Federer, if you're just waking up, has been knocked out of the Australian Open by RSN 927's very own. He's our man.
He is. Stefanos
Tsitsipas.
And he was outstanding in that interview with you just a bit over a week ago now and gave us a sign in... We should have taken the sign. Gave us a sign that he thought this year would be Grand Slam semi-final.
Yep,
that was his aim. Get that in a major. And... Geez, getting closer now, isn't he?
I loved the confidence when he... Yep. So that was the last question I asked him, was his aims at a major in 2019, and he said, I want to make a semi-final.
Yep.
Now, there's a lot of players who would have gone, constant improvement, or I want to work on this part of my game, or no, I haven't really set any goals, blah, blah, blah. But he was, semi-final, straight away. And now he's very, very close to doing that in January.
Yeah, and he's an engaging person, isn't he? You can tell that from the interview that you did with him, and you can tell him from the on-court interview with John McEnroe last night.
Yep.
Melbourne has fallen in love with him already, and that's great. He's Greek. We've got an amazing Greek community here as well. And just his link with this city, I was telling you before we went on air that his maternal grandfather was Russian, because his mother's Russian, of course, so there you go, was a guy called Sergei Selnikov, who won a gold medal for Russia in Melbourne, 1956 Olympics, with the soccer team, the football team back then.
Unbelievable.
Incredible story. So he's you've got Stefanos having his greatest moments so far. There'll be more to come, of course, in Melbourne, as his grandfather did. Incredible.
Nice little bit of symmetry there. No,
I've got to give you something after Sandra Bunn's faux pas there.
He's a great story, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and I think he is part of this new generation that maybe is starting, although I'm on board Rafa and Joker still. I think
he's going well, Rafa.
Rafa.
He's just brutal at the moment, isn't he?
He is. The other night against Alex Diminor, he took his game to another level. Good luck.
Yeah, and it's funny because we've talked about this next wave of players coming through to replace it was the big four and we're down to the big three pretty much. We've been waiting for 5, 6, 7 years, haven't we? And we thought that would come a number of years ago, but it's just starting to emerge now. And I think, you know what? That's good for tennis. As much as we love Rafa and we love Roger and we love Novak, we do love seeing other people come through and just being able to tell different stories.
Yes, exactly.
That's
and
it.
Refreshing.
Refreshing different stories. And I think that's the beauty of tennis at the moment, that we're on the cusp of, hopefully, and Craig Gabriel obviously will talk about that soon, that we've got some different stories to tell, which I think is fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, Stefanos Tsitsipas in four sets last night over Roger Federer. Sensational win for him. So did you mainly watch the tennis?
Oh, there we go. Back to Channel 7.
Did you mainly watch the tennis and then flick over a bit to the Big Bash, or were you a Big Bash man who flicked over to check the score on the tennis?
Certainly not the Big Bash last night. I had a quick flick. just trying to do the right thing and have a quick flick, and it was just really sounds bad. As good as the Federer match would have been to go into five sets, it would have been engrossing. I'm thinking, getting up at 4 a.m. and going to a fifth set's not a good thing. So I was really pleased when Stefanos was able to do the business and close the game out in four.
What about the knobhead in the first set who called out on that? That was incredible.
What makes a person do that?
I don't know.
I often wonder that with the tennis, and I think we've had problems in the past, but I think it seems to have cleared up a little bit in recent years. But last, what was that? What makes a person do it?
I don't know.
Did you catch Spider Cam?
Oh, geez.
Did you catch that? it went rogue Spider Cam last night.
Spider Cam was drunk.
Yesterday.
Driving. Spider-Cam.
Lucky someone wasn't seriously injured.
That we laugh about it. But that honestly could have taken out the chair umpire and a ball kid.
Absolutely.
And it would have been the biggest story of the Australian Open this year.
Wow. Yeah. I wasn't sure whether you're aware of the rogue Spider-Cam. So.
Oh, thank goodness that everyone was okay. But, geez, that could have been bad. Last night in the Big Bash, meanwhile,
it did happen,
Sydney
didn't
Sixers, it did. 7-1-77, they smashed the Brisbane Heat. Bash Brothers not able to make an imprint on that one. Off to a slow start, all out for 98. Falling plenty of runs short there, and also, bowled out within 18 overs. So the Sixers and that ringer, Lloyd Pope.
Don't you love Lloyd?
He's good fun.
He is good fun. He's going to be great fun going forward.
Yep. Bowls him, geez, his wrong is huge. Mm. He almost spins his wrong and more than his natural leg. He bowled a classic leg spin delivery last night that drifted in, pitched on leg and clipped the outside of off. It was he's going to be one to watch. Only 19 or 20 as well, so plenty of cricket left for him.
He's got a new star is born tonight on Rod Laver Arena.
In case you're just waking up this morning, Stefanos Tsitsipas winning in four sets over Roger Federer, knocking the six-time Australian Open champion out of the tournament. 6-7, 7-6, 7-5, 7-6. A dramatic night at Rod Laver Arena. And there watching it all was Craig Gabriel. Craig, good morning.
Morning. A new star may be born, but he certainly wasn't shallow.
No. He's our man. He spoke to him a couple of weeks ago on the show.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
He's lots of fun.
Yeah.
Tennis isn't his only interest, which we've spoken about a lot.
Yep.
Carries his huge
camera equipment
around, loves photography, loves vlogging, video vlogging
he does.
As well.
I forgot about that. Yes,
so
he does.
He lets us in on his life a little bit, which is great. I think it actually gives the fans a little bit more insight and access. Yeah. And tell you what, I don't think he'll be struggling for a girlfriend over the next couple of years.
Not at all.
He's incredibly popular.
And how good... I love the style of tennis that Stefanos Tsitsipas plays as well. How do you rate his style? Can that take him to, you know, the heights of getting into
Absolutely.
The top five in the world?
Absolutely. He's tall. He's got great reach. You know, he takes a couple of strides and he's from one end of the court to the other with a couple of strides. He's got that power. And at last, we're seeing a few more single-handed backhands.
Yes.
Exactly. And he's worked strong on that, hasn't he? He's obviously...
Yeah.
It was a decision that he had to make, which way to go. And watching Roger from the time he was 6 years
exactly.
of age clearly has made an impression on him.
Big impression. He can be a bit fiery at times, and that's okay. That's all right. No problem with that, as long as you don't go overboard. And that adds to the atmosphere and the attention and you know, and the grip of watching a match like that. And so, yes, nice stuff.
I think the thing I liked about his answer when we asked him about that one-handed backhand was he said it came from watching Roger Federer as a kid, but then he asked a coach to teach him properly how to carry it out. So it wasn't I'm going to be like Roger Federer. It was like, I want to be like Federer and then teach me how to be better than Federer. So he's always had those strong ambitions. How deep can he go in this tournament? He said to us his aim was semi-final.
Yep.
Can he make it?
Yes. He's got Roberto Bautista Agut, the guy has got to be, you know,
he's had less
playing
sleep
on
than you,
fumes.
Craig.
The wall.
He's got to be on fumes. I mean, another five-setter yesterday against Marin Cilic. How is that? Within a couple of hours, both finalists from last year are out.
Yes.
But Bautista Agut is, I mean, a Lacoste ambassador.
Is
there
he?
You
oh,
go.
There we go.
What is that's it what it is.
People who don't have much sleep and are Lacoste ambassadors over these
Roger,
2 weeks.
Novak Djokovic, Bautista Gut. Moi.
Craig, we've been talking for probably 5-6 years now about the changing of the guard. Do we feel like we're at an interesting sort of cusp for tennis at the moment?
You know what? Federer was asked this, and he said, oh, we've been hearing this for 10 years. And he's right in saying that. There was a group of players that we were all talking about taking that next step. They've been leapfrogged. And I'm talking about Grigor Dimitrov, Kei Nishikori. I'm not saying they're going to fade away. They're still there. They're still relevant. But I think a lot felt that they were going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. It's not the case. They're being leapfrogged by this generation. And I've earmarked the two people, Stefanos Tsitsipas and Karen Kartanov, for this year. For making major strides. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get there. They're 20, 21, 22 at the most. And you've got Alexander Zverev at 20, who's already there. Mm-hmm. You've got a couple of the other ones just even creeping in there, like Alex Dimino, and et cetera. So that is what is going to be this next generation that's moving up to the highest echelons.
What does it mean for Roger? What did you see from him last night that maybe we haven't seen in the past couple of years?
No, look, I don't think there were any issues with Roger. He had his chances. First two, he should have been up 2-0.
Yeah.
He had opportunities in the third again. I think it was just, you know, too many errors in that match. And he was, some of those errors were sloppy, sure, but he was being pressured. By Tsitsipas.
Yeah. Every time Roger loses in Melbourne, which is very rare anyway, certainly has been over the last few years, everyone talks about, is this the last time? How long do you see Roger going on for, do you think?
I'm not sure he even knows himself. Mm. He's hinted both ways about staying, whether he's going to go, etc. My feeling is he'll go through 2020. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. He's indicated that he'd like to play Tokyo, and that's my feeling. And maybe what'll happen is that maybe Laver Cup, which he part owns, September 2020, which would be end of Olympics, end of US Open, etc.
Interesting he mentioned he might play a little bit of the clay court season this year
I'll admit, I didn't sit through the entire media conference because of commitments, but I found that out this morning, which is interesting.
Yeah, that would be a bit of a shift from the last couple of years. We'll move on from Tsitsipas and Roger Federer from last night. It was an epic contest, and I'm sure we're all falling in love with Stefanos Tsitsipas. A couple of the other winners from yesterday, you mentioned Bautista Agut, but Francis Tiafoe, he's a man who, I think, speaking of capturing the imagination, he's got personality, ripping the shirt off at the end. I'm sure he did
himself to
lots of people at the end of every game too. He's got a bit of a strut about him. He's a wonderful story, Craig, and beating Grigor Dimitrov yesterday has now set himself up with a quarterfinal berth.
Quarterfinals for the first time at a major.
Yeah.
That is big bucks.
Another young 20-year-old.
Yeah, another one. He won
21
now. He won his first title in February, March last year at Delray Beach. And yesterday was his 21st birthday. He became very emotional at the end. Extremely. There were a lot of heavy tears. And I think what it was really, obviously, a sense of relief getting that result, and there was a tight match against Dimitrov. But 10 years ago, he promised his parents that he would change their lives. They were immigrants from Sierra Leone in West Africa. His father was a cleaner and sort of part-time type coach at a club. And they settled in the United States on the East Coast, and the rest is history. This family, melded in there, and Francis Tiafoe is the result of all the work and dedication.
$450,000 helps the
sure
family
does.
As well.
Yeah,
so
it sure does.
It's a great story.
It is a great story, isn't it? We talked about Rafa leading into the tournament, whether he had enough miles in the legs and how his body was going to stand up. He's been particularly brutal so far in getting rid of some opponents. How confident are you that Rafa can win this event?
Oh, he has to be strongly favoured and considered. Mm. I don't think he's going to lose to Tiafoe. I think with the attention that Tiafoe has received and the hype of yesterday, I think he may, I'm not saying he will, but he may suffer a little bit of a letdown, and Rafa will be right there to pounce on that sort of thing. But yes, absolutely. He has to be a contender for the title. He's done it before, but it's incredible. This is, he's only won one Australian Open. Yeah. 10 years, this is the 10th anniversary of that. Mm. So, yeah, let's
see. The ultimate 10-year challenge, isn't it?
Well, yeah, really, yeah, yeah, it? Yeah. So, boy, did he... annihilate Thomas Burdick yes. yesterday. Thomas tweeted, I wasn't there for the first two sets.
And also Alex Diminor too. I think that was a lesson on
just
Friday
brutal
night.
Rafa,
he
wasn't it?
I mean, that he took his game to another level.
But towards the latter stages of the third set, Burdick had started to get a foot in the door.
Yep.
And was there a break point, I think, towards the end? And it could have been a little bit different. But I think even if Burdick had got that third set, Nadal would have changed gears.
Yep. For Alex Diminor too, who went down on Friday night to Rafa, what can he take out of this year's Australian Open? Because that was a step up in class, obviously.
And yeah.
Rafael Nadal, I mean, I thought he was playing his A game against... There wasn't much left in the tank.
No,
he was sensational.
I also feel that with Rafa playing Diminor was the fact that he knew how hyped that match was and how much attention it was getting, and he had to step on the kid from the beginning, void out the crowd, not allow them to get into the match, because you saw what happened towards the end of that third set when Diminor started to pick up a couple of points, played some unbelievable rallies. The crowd were really getting into it, and that was just lifting Alex. Those last couple of games of that match were fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Five match points were saved, so that was exciting, yeah. And I think that was Rafa's plan. That was in his mind.
So what does Diminor take out of this
Sorry, that was, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
I think you, look, obviously disappointed. He shouldn't be, because this is all experience. He obviously thought that he was going to produce a closer match, considering that he had played Nadal at Wimbledon. It was exactly the same score. But I don't. He shouldn't lose any heart. I mean, he's got Davis Cup coming up. He'll build on this. He can see what he has to do, build up strength, build up some more fitness, he's fine. Yeah.
A few of the other Australians from the weekend who went down on the men's side of things. First of all, Alex Bolt, who was wiped off a court by Alexander Zverev, 6-3, 6-3, 6-2. That was a bit of a lesson for the young Australian.
It was.
Who had such a good tournament as well after entering on a wild card.
Absolutely. But Zverev was very complimentary about Alex Bolt. He said he needs that consistency, gets a few matches, a few wins. He feels he can be a very secure top 100 player. And Bolt took that on board. Again, he said he's got to appreciate what more has to be done to be playing with guys at that level at these tournaments. And his plan is to play more ATP-level tournaments rather than the challenges which he's been playing.
And Alexei Popyrin was absolutely...
It.
How good was the... I mean, he was fantastic, and it's going to take a lot away from
absolutely
Saturday night, potentially in a frame for a Davis Cup effort at some stage as well.
Absolutely. That was a wonderful, absolutely wonderful performance from Alexei in that match against Luca Puy. Puy was starting to get really rattled, and it was just unfortunate in that fifth set. Popyrin was up a break at the beginning, and just a couple of lacking a bit of experience on those. If he had had a bit more behind him, Puy was out of the tournament.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
it's exciting times, isn't it, for Australian
wonderful
tennis? It is good to see.
In terms of that as well, Macca mentions the exciting times. With the international media visiting here, we obviously focus on the Australians a hell of a lot within our own circles. Is there talk about the depth in Australian tennis from others internationally as well, or not as much?
Not
as... We get a bit obsessed with our own.
But we should be. I mean, for goodness sake, the Brits bring a no-hoper into a press conference even after they've lost at Wimbledon. Seriously. The French, but they've got class.
Yep.
So it's each nation will be looking out for their own players. There's one American journalist who is more concerned about the negative stuff that happened around Hewitt and Tomic and Kyrgios and Kokkinakis and all that last week, and that was the only concern he had about Australian tennis.
Mm. Well, I think a lot of people are concerned about that.
Yeah, but you know, why would a foreigner really be interested in that sort of thing?
Bit of a soap opera in the
this guy is.
I like the sound of this. Yeah. But it is. I mean, it's good to see, you know, that the week is sort of continued on from a really disappointing start from some of the media coverage, which is understandable for what was going on. It is positive going forward, Craig. It's finished on a high, hasn't it? Ash, you know, Ash obviously potentially take it even further. But the men's side of it, there seems to be a bit of, you know, growing depth there from the Australians' point of view, which is good.
Oh, I think it's very, very good. And the fact that they were either into the second week or very close to the second week, and that's kept things so alive even more at the Australian Open. I mean, sure, you're never going to, it's a major, so you're never going to lose the appeal, but it's hyped even more to see the locals doing well.
Oh. That's it. And Ash Barty is through to the very first Grand Slam quarterfinal.
Yeah, and she's an absolute champion. She was never, ever going to go away. So I knew that I just had to keep chipping away. And in a sense, just trust what the work that we've done. I know that I can match it with the best, and when I execute, I know that I can.
Ash Barty yesterday threw in three sets over former champion Maria Sharapova. The best moment, I reckon, of sport in the whole weekend from an Australian perspective. It was sensational to watch, and the way she fought back from that first set and then just annihilated her in the last, then got a few wobbles, and then maintained her composure and was able to hold it together. That's a big win for her confidence, Craig.
That is such a good news story.
Jeez, I was worried in that last set, though.
Never in doubt. Look, no fingernails on that one. 9 games in a row she won in the middle stages of that match.
Yeah.
Up 3-love at the double break, serving for 4-love. Gets broken, then it starts to get tense and all that. And when she was serving for it, and that double fault, when the challenge didn't go with her.
Yes.
But she stamped it with the ace on match point. No better way.
One main thing.
Prime Minister didn't mind it.
Oh, don't get started on
that. Oh, ScoMo.
I want to ask about her serve, because that seems to be one area of her game that has really picked up over the last 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. She's worked on all aspects of her game, but I was doing the ball-by-ball commentary for most of that match on Australian Open Radio, and when she hit a couple of those aces, I've gone, what? And they had some pace on them. Placement more, but they certainly had a bit of pace.
Yeah, she hasn't beaten Petra in 3 attempts so far, most recently in Sydney. Yeah. What does she need to do differently this time, do you think, to cause the upset?
I think, essentially, she's just got to do what she did in Sydney and maybe just better it a little bit. Because she was in a winning position in Sydney. She was up 3-love in the final set.
Yep.
And she had, and, you know, Petro serving for it. She breaks Petro in the final set, all that sort of thing. So it's just, I think, a matter of just tightening up things. I don't think she really needs to do much more than what she did.
And clearly the crowd's going to play a factor, because it did yesterday. You could just, even Ash was talking about she'd never heard anything as loud as that.
Ringing in her ears, the noise of the crowd.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be a big,
huge
advantage in her favour. I mean, it's hard to put a percentage on, but would it be, how significant will that be in deciding this particular match?
Look, I think it's important, really important, because you just get this unbelievable sense in you. And then you wonder, how's this, if it's, you know, affecting me in this such a positive way, it has to be a bit of a negative for the person across the net. Let's take advantage of that. Let's try and find a few openings and have the crowd erupt even more. So it is a big thing. When it gets to the majors like this, for the local players, when it gets to Davis Cup, when it gets to Fed Cup, that crowd aspect, that is the $64 question and the difference it makes.
It was very comfortable sitting at home yesterday. I was able to make a nice cup of tea in between the second and third set, mainly because of a longer than anticipated toilet break.
Could have had a
Maria
couple of cups of tea.
I could have brewed it and grown it myself.
What, you know, as Ash said, she's in the within the rules to take that toilet break. I think they're entitled to one toilet break now.
Yep, used to be two.
Yeah.
Yep.
So she makes it at a strategic point. But why did she go all the way to the locker room?
Now, this is the question.
You know,
How can tennis, I mean, is it as simple as saying, you've just got to use the toilet that is courtside?
The closest. Yeah.
Well, that should be within the rule.
Should be a rule.
It should be a rule that you don't then have to go out to the locker room.
Right.
Why? I mean, there's various different toilets. We know that.
No.
Without going any into detail.
I'm sure they're the latest loose.
Yes. You would think that they would be state of the art.
I mean, you know, it's Maria. Maybe it's one of those that I've had at hotels as well. Mm. It's all push button. And as soon as the door opens, the lid pops up on the loo. Maria wouldn't have to touch anything.
Craig, there was an interesting question thrown to Maria about the drug situation.
Yes.
And she quickly put it away. You know, tell us a little bit about her mindset at the moment, do you think, and how she responded to that.
Look, obviously she was absolutely fuming still when she walked
into the death stare, I think it was.
Total. Daggers and daggers.
What's it like as a journalist going into her press conference?
Doing your job. Yeah, doing your job as you should.
You don't really consider it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any difference. You got to go in there and ask the questions. If you're going to get that sort of response, that's a news piece anyway for a lot. The question was put to her by Stuart Fraser, the tennis writer for The Times in London. And, you know, I think it was a very interesting, gutsy question.
Absolutely. You should get extra for that, shouldn't you?
Because...
So what did he ask in particular?
I'm trying to get the exact wording, but I think he said, Maria, you were taking Maldonium when it was legal for 10 years. It's not. How is your health?
Oh, not good. Is she as disliked on tour as we all think she is?
She's not the most popular. Yeah, as Wozniacki says, well, nobody talks to her.
Yeah.
Then she said, well, I don't stay in the locker rooms anyway.
She does when she has to go to the toilet out to the locker room.
Yes, in the distance.
Exactly. So some of the other results from SA on the women's side of things, Angelique Kerber going down, which was a big upset.
Huge.
Danielle Collins has now
gone opens
bang,
up the
bang.
Draw too, doesn't it?
Oh, hey, look, if she was going to lose, okay, but I never expected 6-2.
No.
I mean, that was diabolical. Absolutely. The first set was over in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. Sloane Stephens also out of the tournament.
Too, but I think she went to the loo that was next to the court.
Funny that. If you're desperate to go, I reckon you'd go to the one that's pretty close. She was beaten by Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova.
How happy was Anastasia?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, Nastya Pav is, I think, her Twitter handle. That was huge because Stephens was seeing herself as a bit of a contender here, and she'd had some narrow escapes like the previous round with two tie breaks.
Yep.
So she felt she was starting to hit the ball well.
And also, Pavlyuchenkova, she's been around for a little while.
Long time. But can be flaky. She's a bit flighty.
Yep.
She's out there to have a good time, and she enjoys it. She's always smiling and laughing and all that. And you saw that happy face on her at the end of the match.
Michael Lynch, but we're talking to him in his role as the football writer for The Age this morning. Lynchy, good morning and welcome to RSN 927 on Summer Breakfast.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. And I have two hats on today, one racing, one football, and I'm also on a train. So if your listeners hear a few announcements, I'm somewhere on the Hurstbridge line.
That's what I say, Lynchy. That'd be the Hurstbridge line. That'd be the Hurstbridge line, Lynchy, going well this morning.
That would be the Hurstbridge line. Heading into the studio.
We want to start, first of all, on Alan Stadjic. This was a sensational development over the weekend on Saturday when it was announced that his contract was to be terminated immediately, sacked literally 5 months out from a World Cup. Did we ever see this coming?
No. I don't think anybody did at all. It was quite extraordinary, as has been the fallout and the response in the ensuing 48 hours. You've got the FFA had, at the behest of the PFA, the Players' Union, been asked to do a number of reports into all the national teams, actually, not just the Matildas, about the way they were being run and how they were operating and the culture and all the rest of it. the FFA decided to make the Matildas first cab off the rank. They conducted their own confidential surveys, also brought in an outside group called Our Watch, which is an organisation that lobbies against violence for women, against women and children. So that's the sort of background to it. The confidential survey produced what the FFA say are alarming, is alarming evidence of an unwarranted and unwanted culture, the sort of workplace environment that, you know, they certainly didn't envisage and don't want for the Matildas, and essentially decided that because Alan Stajic was the man at the top of the pyramid and presiding over the whole operation, he had to go. What's strange about this is that there had been no inkling, certainly in the public domain, from any of the players or any leaks, and you know, you've all worked in sport and been involved in sport a long time too. These things just get out, don't they? Even if they're not written about or spoken about on the radio, people tend to know about them because they get discussed. Yet, you know, very few of us had heard any of this sort of stuff. So they presented Alan Stajic with the findings, I believe, on Friday and told him there was no way back, and that he was going to have to go. Now, what's happened subsequently is quite extraordinary. A lot of people were happy to talk off the record. Firstly, they held a press conference in Sydney, which David Gallop and Chris Nicu, the chairman and CEO of the FFA, both coincidentally of whom are lawyers, were very lawyerly in the way they talked around the issues. They made no explicit examples of the so-called toxic culture. They said they couldn't go into any detail and wouldn't go into any detail. There were a number of people involved with the Matildas, you know, or who had dealt with the camp, who did talk off the record, didn't want to go public, didn't want to be named, alleging a culture of bullying and a mental disintegration, and that Stajic pushed his charges to the limit, physically and mentally. Then, equally extraordinarily, a large number of established and star Matildas players, with the biggest star of all, Sam Kerr, coming out yesterday in favour of the coach. You know, Twitter's the kind of town centre megaphone these days, isn't it? And I think nearly a dozen of the golden generation of Matildas have come out in support of the coach and said how shocked they are and spun they are and disappointed he won't be leading them to the World Cup in France. So whether that's indicative of schisms and separations within the camp, or whether it's just the natural reaction from a bunch of players who've been led to the greatest successes of their careers by this coach, remains to be seen. I mean, there's no doubt Stajic has had a much better record than any previous Matildas coach. Now, the players convene in Sydney today for a two-day camp. I believe David Gallop is going to address them, and, you know, we'll just wait to see what comes out of this. But it looks as if it's a murky kind of situation. There's a lot of politics, it would appear, involved, given the schismatic kind of responses from the stars. Others have kept silent. There's a lot of debate, speculation about a push for a woman to be in charge, or will they go for a more high-profile man who's had success with women in the past? So it's an ongoing story, this one.
Time now to talk a bit of footy. We spoke about the unfortunate side of pre-season, but the good side of pre-season is visible to all, especially amongst the Brisbane Lions. And Harris Andrews joins us on the line on this Monday morning. Harris, good morning. Welcome to RSN 927.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, thanks for jumping on. First of all, a pre-season camp in Tassie. Now, is Chris Fagan just taking you down there to visit a few of the family? What are you doing down in Tassie?
Yeah, no, we've come down the last couple of years. It's been fantastic. And, I guess we found a really good opportunity to come down here and avoid the heat of up in Brisbane and get a good training load in. So, yeah, it's a great place to come. We've actually we've been in Launceston for the last 2 years and decided to venture down to Hobart this year. So it's been really good.
Lovely. A bit more scenery down there in Hobart. Absolutely. As well, by the water there. It's a beautiful place to be. What do you get up to on the camp down in Hobart, Harris?
I guess it's probably from more of a training perspective. We're able to, I guess, get a lot of training in and certainly spend a lot of time in it. We're boarding at the University of Tas on the Hill in Hobart, and the boys are sharing the dorms and that, so yeah, we get a lot of time to spend together and build those relationships, which ultimately will help us as a football club moving forward.
And Harris, so obviously yesterday you played a 3 15-minute periods of sort of match practice. How did Lachie Neale fit into that sort of midfield bracket? An impressive kid. I don't wonder whether you played an impressive kid yesterday called Luke Hodge, who's done a couple of pre-seasons in the past. Did he have a run around yesterday as well?
Yeah, they sure did. Lachie did really well on the inside of the contest. His midfield ball, particularly around stopping his first pass, and something that I'm really excited to see develop over the next few years, along with guys like Hugh McCluggage and Jared Berry. But they're obviously complementing each other. And, Hodgie was out there for a good few interviews today, directing traffic and doing what he does best, which was fantastic.
In terms of lining up over the pre-season against opponents, obviously, internally, do you get to play on Eric Hipwood a fair bit?
We haven't yet. As far, we've sort of we've tried to put a bit of an AFL team versus our reserves team to, try and build synergy within the team. But there's certainly lots of opportunities over the pre-season to, play on guys like Eric Hipwood and Daniel McStay and Oscar McInerney. I'm sure we've got a fair bit of match practice coming up over the next sort of month or so. And I'm sure we'll set that up, which will be good fun.
How competitive does it get when you're in those match practice situations internally and also between the forwards and the backs? And also I want to ask, is there anyone who is a bit of your bunny? Have you got anyone's measure in that forward line of Brisbane?
It certainly does get fairly competitive. I know from previous games and that, like playing on guys like Hippie and Macca, probably a little bit too competitive, but that never hurt anybody, and it's all in good spirit. We're all trying to improve each other. And in regards to having a bunny, not really, unfortunately. It's good working on those guys because they all have different strengths, and you're always learning, so it's good fun.
Harris, you had a great year last year, and it was a relatively settled back six for Brisbane, which was a real success story for your team. How will the addition of Marcus Adams help with the flexibility of that back half?
Yeah, I think over the last few years we've been able to, cement that back six, seven, which has been really handy, and we've got really good synergy through that part of the ground, and to have Marcus come through, and play alongside us is going to be really handy, and he's done a really good job over the last, couple of years at the Western Bulldogs to implement his intercept marking in the game, and that's something that we obviously identify and something we need to improve on. I'm looking forward to, working alongside him for, the next few years and building that relationship and hopefully being able to complement each other out on the ground.
Sensational effort on the weekend by Ash Barty to get through. There were a few nervous moments late on in the third set yesterday, but she steadied to hold her composure, and she's now through to her first quarterfinal of her Grand Slam career. Nicole Pratt, Aussie tennis legend herself, joins us on this Monday morning for a chat about that. Nicole, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Morning, great to be here.
Tell us about the significance of that win, not only for Ash yesterday, but for Australian women's tennis.
Oh, I think, it's fantastic for Ash personally. She's been working hard and certainly she said that at the end of the match, saying, her team has put in a great effort over the pre-season and, starting to see some of the rewards. So, it's fantastic for her, but also, Aussie women's tennis. I think we've had sort of a really good summer overall. And, to see one of our players going so deep into the tournament, that's only going to give the rest of the players, a ton of confidence for 2019.
So good to see an Australian into the second week. In terms of her game over the last 18 months, we were talking a little earlier on the show about how much her serving has improved. What do you think has been her main improvement over these last 18 months, 2 years?
I agree with you, the serve. I mean, she has, her stats say that pretty much she's in top two in the world in terms of serving stats. The only other player that's actually sort of really better than her and particularly under pressure is Serena Williams. And I think Ash, has just chipped away over time. you know, working on all areas of a game. I think maturity, the ability to play more out on the road week in, week out, I think has definitely paid off. So, yeah, it's a combination of different things. Ash has always had such a high skill level, the ability to hit all shots. And I guess sometimes, too, when you have the ability to hit all shots, it takes some time to sort of figure out which ones to hit at the right time. So she's certainly doing a lot of that right now.
And Ash hasn't beaten Petra in three attempts, but she's come mighty close. Is there one aspect of Petra's game that that Ash should be focusing on ahead of this particular clash?
Yeah, I think the returning. Kvitova's got a very good, you know, lefty serve, and the lefty serve, she's able to swing it out to sort of Ash's backhand side, and Ash, you know, she definitely favours the forehand. It's a weapon for her. And so I think it's going to come down to, you know, how well Ash returns. I think once she gets herself into rallies, certainly she's a more than 50-50 chance of winning those, and serve she dominates. So I think it'll sort of come down to returning from both players, really.
How deep do you think Ash can go, not only at the Australian Open, but all the majors this year? Is she ready to break through and even get to a final or win a slam?
Well, I think yesterday was a breakthrough for her. I mean, that's a big win to beat, you know, a legend like, you know, Maria Sharapova, who's always so tough in those moments. You can see Maria almost got back into the match yesterday when Ash had a 4-love lead. And, you know, I think Ash is the type of player that, you know, she takes it match by match and day by day. And I think if she kind of has that attitude, then, you know, I think she will, you know, give herself the best chance. She'll put her best foot forward. I don't want to say, and you know, that she's, you know, going to win a Grand Slam in the near future, because I think she would just prefer that, you know, like she'd like other people, I think, to just talk about, you know, one day at a time. So as long as she does that, then I think there's some great things ahead for her.
One man who'll be able to tell us about the way Curtis Patterson batted, and also how he bowled, and how the Melbourne Stars are getting back on track as well, is Scott Boland, who played in that CA11 game over the weekend. Scott, good morning and welcome back to RSN 927.
No worries, thanks for having me.
First of all, we'll start on Curtis Patterson. Some reports coming through that he might have received a call from selectors and he might be headed up to Brisbane to be a part of the test squad. How impressed were you with his batting over the last 3 days?
Not just the last 3 days. The last couple of years, he's been really consistent. And I think just over the weekend, he just showed that he can do it against some world-class attacks. And he batted really well. He got 150 and 105 not out, didn't get out for the game. And, I don't really remember him giving me a chance, so yeah, he was pretty good.
For those who don't get to watch stacks of Shield cricket, what type of batsman is he in the longer version of the game?
He's a tall left-handed batter. He's quite stylish. He likes, like most left-handers, likes to cover drive the ball. Hits the ball really hard. Looks like he's got plenty of time to play shots.
And looking forward, obviously, to another batsman, hopefully Will Pekowski, making his test debut this week. How exciting is that, you know, from your perspective, who's had a fair bit to do with him as well, and how do you expect young Will to go?
It's really exciting, especially for Will. He's only, I think he's 20, so he's almost got the world at his feet now. He's hopefully he'll make his debut this week. He's probably one of the... probably the best young batter in the country. He's shown once he's only played 8 or 9 Shield games, but when he gets in, he goes really big and makes huge hundreds, and it's really hard to get out.
Yeah, you mentioned that he was potentially the best young player you've ever seen. That's a big compliment, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, he's just, like, when you even just bind him in the net, to just like you feel like you're buying about 100 Ks. You feel like he's got so much time. You get in it, and then when he got the 250 over the whacker on a pretty pretty good, like, fast wicket, he just looked like he could hit the ball wherever he wanted, and basically didn't really know where to bowl him.
This CA11 squad was a lot stronger than previous squads we've seen put out against touring sides over the last couple of years. Scotty, what was it like to be involved in the game with a lot of players who are vying for test spots?
Yeah, it was good. It was good to hit out for everyone. It's good to be recognised in a squad like that when they are picking obviously a really strong squad. So it's nice to be recognised that way. And then, we came together pretty quickly. I think we all came together for two nights before the game, and had a training session the day before a game, and then straight into the game for the 3 days. And I think we probably outplayed Sri Lanka for pretty much the whole game, and I expect Australia to do the same thing when the test starts next week.
Test match cricket is a good thing for the Melbourne Stars. Obviously, getting the band back together as well. Do you feel, even though the Stars have got a bit of ground to make up, do you feel that with everyone back, that your team is as good as any, including the Hurricanes, who have just taken it all before them so far this summer?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were last, and then we won one game, and now we're up to fourth. So I think the competition is so even now. I think the Hobart Hurricanes are obviously miles ahead of everyone else. I think if they keep winning, it's just everyone else is going to be going for the other three spots to make the top four. So I think with the form that Marcus Stoinis is in, and Pete Hanscom and Adam Zampa as well, I think we're going to be pretty hard to beat. And then I think when finals come around, we might get Sandeep back as well. So it's just going to make us even stronger.
Did you all get around and watch the Big Bash throughout the 3 day tour game?
We tried to. It was a day night game for the Kickball. So. We watched bits and pieces. We watched a fair bit of the Stars Renegades game as the game down in Hobart finished quite early, so we could watch that game. And we watched some of the girls' games during the day.
And Scotty, obviously coming as a big few days for the Stars. Obviously, starting off on Wednesday in Maui. Have you been to Maui before? And what do you know of the ground there?
We went to Maui in sort of the lead up to our first. Big Bash game this year. We were meant to play a practice game there, but due to the weather, we couldn't get on the ground. But no, I haven't been on the ground, but I've heard it's quite big. We expect a pretty good ground. A pretty good crowd on Wednesday afternoon.
They do pack it out there.
Yeah, and no, I'm looking forward to a bit of almost country-style cricket later on this week. And then you played the Brisbane Heat, obviously, on Saturday as well, on Sunday rather. So bowling. First of all, to the Sri Lankans with a pink ball 1 week, and then the next Sunday you're going to be bowling to the Bash Brothers with a white ball trying to contain them. How different are those two mindsets?
Very different. We went from obviously the pink ball on a very flat wicket, which didn't really offer much swing or seam or bounce or anything. So that was quite hard work to try and get wickets down there, and then obviously going to be pretty hard next Sunday trying to get rid of those two blokes. But I think at the MCG we got the big square boundaries there, so we're going to have to use those to our advantage, and I'm sure we'll use plenty of spin up front as well.
The voice of cycling joins us, Phil Liggett, after the Tour Down Under finished yesterday. An incredible race again, and scarily similar to last year. Phil, good morning and thanks for your time again on RSN 927.
It's a great pleasure. Good morning to you. Nice to hear all of Melbourne blocked up with cars because I'm still in Adelaide.
Good stuff. Now, it was a strange race yesterday, considering it was so similar to what happened 12 months ago with Richie Porte racing up Wallunga Hill and Darryl Impey waiting to see if he'd gained enough time on him.
That's right. Last year, Richie almost did it. He was half a second too slow at the top of the climb and won by Darryl on countback of finishing positions. This year, it was a different kettle of fish. Richie lost too much time, and we're only ever talking seconds in the Tour Down Under. He couldn't make it up, but what he wanted really was to win that last stage, the sixth successive year at Top of the Hill. He was never going to win the race, in my opinion, and Darryl knew that. At the end of the day, Darryl was just behind him, so there was no big deal.
Phil, could you take us a bit behind the emotion that Darryl showed yesterday and the story behind that?
Yes, I mean, he lost a dear friend, and I did too, of course, just before Christmas in Paul Sherwin. And he was riding with another man on his shoulders, and, you know, that's an incredible incentive. It was very special for Darryl. I was with him in December in Johannesburg, where he lives, and we were doing a little gig for the young talent coming through in South Africa. And we were talking there, and he said his one thing he wanted to do was to come back down to Adelaide and win again. He's the first rider to do it, and he's done it in big style, and he's, believe me, very, very happy last night.
Now, in terms of the weekend's action as a whole, it was a very dramatic Saturday with Caleb Ewan being disqualified after a crash. Tell us what happened on that stage.
Well, Well, we had a double header there, 9 kilometres out from the finish. The race leader for 4 days, there, Patrick Bevan, touched the wheel of Calabuin in the tight bunch as they were lining up for the 9 kilometre dash to the finish in Strathalbyn. And he touched the back wheel, it appears, and down he went. And he fell very heavily, Patrick. And the peloton played them, they played the game, because they actually slowed down, even though they were closing in on the finish, and he got back into the race. But he was very badly injured. He was holding his ribs. He went for a CAT scan. He went for a concussion test, etc. As far as Caliber's concerned, he got involved in a bit of argy-bargy with a Belgian rider, Jesper Philipsen. He was trying to push Philipsen off the back wheel of Peter Sagan. He was using his head and his shoulders, and you just can't do that. And he got the position, and Philipsen himself, he's only 20. He's a young pro rider in his first few weeks as a pro. Didn't complain.